Hello and welcome to the Undercooked Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Team Hours Daily, and we are back to review the second and final part of the 2024 Formula 3 season. Joining me to do this is none other than Mr. Jesse Billington. How are you?
I'm doing all right. A bit croaky. It's been a hell of a weekend. And then, of course, spent nearly an hour and a half chatting all things Italian Grand Prix for the Formula One last night. But back,
And we
ready
didn't
to
even
look
touch
at.
the corners and Formula 3 as part of that.
We didn't even get close to any of the feeder series content. But we're back and we're here to talk Formula 3. And wow. Certainly Monza, what a belter. And I mean, it's lived up to it all the way through the rest of that. So, it's going to be exciting. We've got some news to delve into too, but how are you doing as well?
Not too bad. I'm the only complaint I have about all of this Formula 3 business is that we weren't able to split it up into more parts just because of how the season's put together. It seems silly to do one before the summer break when there was only one round left after the summer break with Monza. But then we have this monster episode that we're going to be recording here because I don't think it's going to be short, unfortunately, for everyone involved here, both you listening to this wherever you are and for us recording it, because with all the news that's come out recently, particularly over this weekend, essentially, and then, like you say, we've been treated to some top tier racing for this, our version of the second half of the season. We're going to be here a while, but it's kind of a great problem to have, I suppose, because Formula 3 hasn't necessarily been lacking. I don't think it's ever been lacking, but it's definitely had weaker points maybe over the last couple of seasons at times, whereas this one has felt like we've been, at the very least with Monza, treated to something quite special. So what have you been thinking, kind of initial thoughts-wise coming off the season now that it's still fresh on your mind?
Initial thoughts, I will say this, Gabrielle Minni remains my favorite driver in the cool down room. He's always so chatty and charismatic. He's always talking to the other guys that are in there because he seems to have had a fairly good run of actually making it to the cool down room, getting to the podium. And he's always been the one that's there, and his energy is boundless. And beyond that, I'd say we've sort of been spoiled a bit for this season. It's had sort of its ups and downs, but certainly its ups have been phenomenal. And I mean, the scrapping at the front, the top seven drivers all within, I haven't even had a chance to calculate it yet, how many points they all finished within. Probably pull it up now and find out. Let's see. Fornaroli, 153, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh on 94, and that was Ollie Gerther, who didn't even compete in the last round. So even if you look at the top six, everyone within 50 points of each other is really phenomenal for the top six drivers. It's been a fairly good one, and this statement for me, I wrote it fairly early on when we were putting the script together for this, stands true post title as well. As happy as I am and was at the time for Fornaroli, who's had a bonzer of a season, the emotion from Minnie when he crossed the line and got to sort of the assembly area post race was palpable and a proper reminder of how driven he is for this sport. And it'll come, kid. It'll come.
Yeah, and I think skipping ahead to the race at Monza and the aftermath of it, as weird as it sounds, I'm quite glad he didn't clinch the title because for us it would have ruined what would have been a very good season up to that point. And I'm talking obviously about the disqualification that he received following that. And considering how close it already was, if that had been how it happened and we have been treated to this great kind of season finale, it would have really tarnished things in a way that makes Spa and F1 look kind of tedious in comparison. So I'm very much kind of agreeing with you here in that it will come for him. I'm just quite weirdly glad it wasn't here, which is an odd sentence to say, but it for the betterment of the sport and for the experience of the fans, I think it was a good twist of fate and definitely a good twist in terms of the racing action that we got. But we will get to Monza. All roads did lead to it, and it was most certainly worth the wait. But we're gonna have to go back to the start. But before we go back to the start, we do actually have some news, which, as I said, kind of came off the back of this weekend. And perhaps the first bit of news is the most unsurprising. It's that Fornaroli graduates to Formula 2 next year. He's the first driver confirmed for the 2025 grid, and like winning Formula 2, you are automatically pretty much guaranteed to get into the next series up on the ladder. Also, quite interestingly, for the second year running, the F3 champion will step up to F2 with Invicta Racing. Gabriel Wortoletto obviously did that this year and is currently battling for the F2 title. If he wins, obviously he cannot really return. and it makes the path easier for Invicta as they can partner Fornarelli with Kushmaini or whoever else they want to put in that second seat. If he doesn't win, however, things become a bit less clear, as that could be quite an interesting team up. It's potentially two F3 champions, but then good luck trying to give them team orders. But this is one of the reasons why we love Formula 2, but I think we can both agree that this is good news.
Yes, yeah, I think it's good news. It's great that we're seeing him able to make that progression, make that step up. And yeah, I mean, you look at what Invicta's doing this year in Formula 2. Invicta Virtuosi, UNI Virtuosi, they've sort of been a bit nowhere for quite some time in F2. And this year, with the new regs and the new car, have properly
And the
stepped
new
up and,
livery.
the new livery have stepped up, met the challenge, come out with a fantastic looking car. And one that's driving pretty well on track as well. Kushmaini's been getting some fantastic results from it. And we've seen much the same from Bortoleto as well. So, yeah, it's been phenomenal, really. And I think it's a great sort of spot for Fornaroli to move up into.
In other news, there will be a brand new Formula 3 car for 2025, which it's going to be quite interesting, I think, because powered by a 6-cylinder 3.4-litre naturally aspirated Mechachrome engine with 380 horsepower and all the latest safety technology to help bring it in line with the F2 and F1 cars, it's also going to run on 100% sustainable fuel. And the most important part for me here, because this is something that I'm sure we'll get to at some point down the order, it's been designed to accommodate female racing drivers too, which has been helped a lot by the fact that Tatiana Calderon has been developing the car, and she was part of the whole unveiling video. I don't know if you got the chance to have a look at that, but she was quite a big part of that. And we remember, of course, when she was last in Formula 2 for a brief spell a couple of years ago, how everyone kind of thought, well, there you go, there's your chance, and all the rest of it. But it doesn't hit home for a lot of casual fans how much of a pain in the ass those cars are when in the cockpit and the seat and all these kinds of seemingly basic things are not custom to you, that you can't really do much with them. They've never had to for a variety of reasons. So the fact that they've been able to accommodate that, probably because of F1 Academy as well, and hopefully means that we can get some more movement up from there over the next year and beyond, quite frankly, means that at least from that side of things, that should no longer be, I don't want to say an excuse, but it should no longer be a disadvantage for anyone who wants to try and get in there. Obviously, we've only had Flörsch really in the car in Formula 3 as a consistent female driver, and not saying that that's not a good enough reason to at least accommodate her in her own car, but it obviously helps if you've got more potentially coming down the pipeline. And interestingly as well, these cars are meant to give us closer racing, which have they not been watching Formula 3? Because I feel like we've had quite a bit of that. I'm excited to see what that really could look like next year. I joked the other day about six cars wide most of the time around. I'll allow for three or four at Monaco as it's a little bit tighter there, but that's kind of they're shooting quite high there, I feel like. What are your thoughts on
If they
seeing
want
the car for next year?
if they want Formula 3 to be closer, clearly they haven't been paying attention to the fact that, like I said, you had top six drivers finishing within 50 points, and it wasn't exactly a spread out grid behind them either. I mean, pretty much every team this year in Formula 3 had someone step on the podium. That's a phenomenal turnout, really. Yes, it's a spec series. Yes, they should be up there, but you with the vast
It's no
variety of
guarantees.
drivers you've got, it's no guarantee. But yeah, I think again, making the cars more accessible is a really wise move. Like you said, we've got drivers that are moving out of Formula One Academy, making these steps up. There's got to be something that's just ready to accept them when they make that move up and come into the next thing. And certainly having a car that's made allowances for differences in body input, like sort of simply the effort it takes to turn the steering wheel when racing, is going to be a big one. It doesn't really matter in Formula One. They've got power assisted steering, so it's a little bit different. So, but obviously through the feeder series, you need to make those accommodations. And we've seen different drivers making those tests. And I mentioned Calderon. I think there'd been private tests in Spain, sort of figuring out the differences to what female forms needs. I can't remember which drivers were doing that. I think it might have been Calderon and Pin. I can't remember off the top of my head. Or might have been Bustamante. Again, name escapes me, but the feeder series have been making these tests and making these steps, which is what we want to see. It makes it a more sustainable series when it comes to getting its drivers in. And it's more sustainable when it comes to its fuel as well. We're looking to run fully sustainable fuels. It's just sort of prolonging what is a very exciting and very approachable racing series and making it more so for years to come.
And last note on that as well, I think it's a crucial time to implement these sorts of things because even though she's not doing brilliantly in FRECA at the moment, we both thought that Mara Garcia should have gone up to F3 this year after winning F1 Academy last year. And obviously, she's got a decent bit of experience under her belt prior to that with W Series. So if whoever wins Abbey Bowling F1 Academy this year does not get the chance to go into F3, it's going to be a little frustrating, especially when you look at the fact that at least two thirds of the grid in F1 Academy won't be able to come back next year because of the rule set there. And you look at people like Bianca Bustamante or Nerea Marti or Hamber Akubesi, who have been solid drivers for the couple of years that they've been in there, and previously as well when we've seen them in other categories elsewhere. You think, I kind of hope we don't hear a lot of driver announcements for Formula 3 anytime soon until after that season is complete, because I would love to see even just two or three of them. You know, you've got 30 drivers on the grid. This would be a great way to test out if what everyone's been doing in terms of trying to accommodate these cars for other body types is actually working. And then you can further develop that when you've got a range of them in the car permanently for an entire season. And they're all drivers that, from their performances, as we've seen across a variety of series, deserve that shot. And it shouldn't just have to be Flush and Tatiana and Jamie, to an extent over in America, being those champions all the time, trying to push forward that change, you know? So this should be the, if they've got the card, then if there isn't even at least one or two women on the grid next year, then you're going to have to scratch your head and think, well, what the bloody hell was the point in that?
Yeah, it's really going to be an interesting one. I mean, looking at what sort of Marta Garcia is able to get up to in FRECA, I think possibly suggests that FRECA wasn't ready as a series. There's something
It's a
like they're
little bit
running
like
a.
British F4 with pulling. It's aside from that one reverse sprint race grid, she's been having a bit of a tougher time there than people would like to maybe admit.
Yeah, especially when you consider the fact that she currently sits behind Dorian Pain, who's only completed six races in FRECA and currently sits ahead of Marta Garcia, who's running in it full time. And I mean, it's no better for some of the other graduates of F1 Academy. Lena Buhler, again, languishing towards the back of the field. There needs to be something done to make things a bit more sort of approachable, I think. And as we see, Formula 2 has sort of brought in a new car that's got a bit of those features. Formula 3 have now bring it in. That change is going to filter down the field, and maybe there will be a sort of deal made to tweak who goes into what series when you win F1 Academy, and maybe it'll move from being FRECA to directly into F3, especially now the car is going to be better suited to that. But the other important news is not necessarily the fact that we've got new cars. We're going to have one less team, concerningly. This is Jensa announcing they're departing Formula 3. And yeah, it's for at least 3 years as well. So clearly a bit of a financial strain. No official word on Formula 3 yet as to whether this is actually being confirmed. But I think the important thing is if Jensa are pulling out, who's going to replace them? And we heard famously when Andretti were flirting with Formula 1, they said, look, if you want us to, we'll go the whole hog. We'll have an F1 Academy team. We'll have an F3 team. We'll have an F2 team. We'll have an F1 team. We'll have progression for drivers. This is a great way to get in there. We've seen Prema and Hightech both make bids to try and become Formula One teams. If you're Andretti, this is yet another way of getting a foot in the door, and a wise one, especially.
Yeah, I think this is definitely something they're going to look at, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's somehow miraculously a lot easier for them to get into Formula 3 than it is into Formula 1. It seems silly that they're having to jump through all these kinds of hoops, especially when, like you say, they offer to do the full thing properly and have a team in every category. But if this is a little bit like the seats being and the cockpit being altered to accommodate, if this is what we have to do as a first step instead, then fine. This is I can be patient with this, you know. And just to see Andretti, it'd be interesting to see, especially in Formula 3, who they would then get. Because they were talking about having Indy Next drivers maybe come over into Formula 3, or drivers that they'd like to put in Indy Next, but they don't have the space for, they put them over here. Be a lot of Americans, and we've seen some interesting young American talent come up through the ranks in recent years. So that could be quite an interesting space to watch, I think. But sad that we're losing Jensa, by the way. I feel like we should maybe include that as well. It's a shame that they've decided not to return. We're not entirely sure why. But it's always a shame when a team leaves, because I think since I started watching, they've definitely been there. And we've seen other teams kind of merge and evolve AIX, PHM, Trueweaves being the obvious one. So it's a shame that they're just closing up completely.
Yeah, I mean, even in things like F2, you've got teams that are taking on sort of full-term sort of sponsorship partners to keep teams alive. It'd be great to see that happening more in F3, of course, sort of with PHMAIX and all that blend sort of becoming one team to another. But yeah, Genza, not a great season this year either, finishing plumb last out of the 10 teams that entered into Formula 3. So we'll see what happens. They might make a return. Fingers crossed they make a return and Andretti arrive as well, offering more seats to more budding drivers as they look to climb their way up the ranks of the single-seater racing series. But we'll jump then into the races that we ought to look back on. And Barcelona, Timo, why don't you kick us off?
Seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it, Barcelona? It's a good job we make notes as we watch these races. Otherwise, we'd be scratching our heads going, what on earth happened there? Because all I've got is Monza on the brain. But luckily, we do have notes. So, Christian Mantle, he claimed pole position, who was quite nice. He's a driver who's kind of had a bit of an underrated season in some ways. He's improved markedly from last year to this year, which is always good to see. And getting pole position, even if you don't necessarily convert it, is always a good way to keep the spotlight on yourself at times. The sprint race was suitably chaotic in places. Definitely at the start, it settled down a little bit, which was surprising considering it's a sprint race, but it does also show the weakness of the Barcelona circuit that we've been talking about for a while across all categories, really. It's kind of if F3 can't make it too exciting, then you've got a little bit of a problem there, and it definitely showed in the feature race, which we'll get to in a moment. But aside from Negatunov and Ramos coming together in the early stages of the race, kind of breaking that sacred rule of taking each other out in teammate-on-teammate action, which was obviously never going to work, there wasn't much else after that. It was surprising because I was thinking sprint race, chaotic, usually is. I had that kind of on autopilot, I'm going to say it. I'm a bit like Daniel Ricciardo's pit crew member. I just reach out and touch the car because that's what I'm there to do. But Spain was a bit of a weird one. It didn't really work in this year, unfortunately. But we did get a brilliant quote about the teammate action from Alex Brundle, saying that that's going to be a long meeting later with no coffee and no sugar, which I must start making a book out of these.
He's great at putting together a little quote as Alex Brundle. And I think, yeah, the teammate on teammate action can be great, as we saw in Monza with the McLarens. But at the same time, when it doesn't work, surprisingly at Barcelona, as we've seen with Mercedes in 2016, and again here with the Tridents, not great.
No, and someone else it did look great for, but ultimately wasn't great for, was Sebastian Montoya. He was charging through the field at quite a rate of knots, and it looked like he was on for points considering his tyre so far back until he and Mini collided. Unfortunate for Mini there, really. Another kind of case of what if for his championship there. Took them both out the race and caused a safety lap with three to go. We thought maybe we could get a bit of a dash to the line, but unfortunately we did not. It finished under the safety car and sort of fizzled out. So Mary Boyer probably didn't complain too much about that as he got to win his home sprint race. Alex Dunn then finished in P2, which I think he was quite surprised at, along with everyone else. And Oliver Goethe, who's obviously now been promoted to F2 to race Colapinto, finished in P3 on that occasion. But yeah, that was about it for the sprint in terms of entertainment, and unfortunately, the feature race didn't really do much more for us, much like F1's 1000th Grand Prix, the infamous Chinese Grand Prix that year, that then didn't really do much of anything. Formula 3's 100th race was a pretty bland affair overall, which is unusual by F3 standards and a bit of a shame. Arvid Lindblad probably didn't care because he won that race, but he also never looked in danger of losing it, crucially, which in Formula 3 is also a bit of a rarity. In doing so, he became the first repeat winner of 2024, which not bad for a rookie at what is it, 16 years old. Mansell himself, having started on pole, finished in P2. Fornaroli taking P3 from Browning, not too far from the end, so he would have been quite satisfied with that. Bit of drama at the end, though. We did get a bit of rain in Sector 3, which for Spain in June was a little unexpected. And we saw a bit of contact between cars, sending drivers such as Stenshall and Van Hoepen down the order and out of the points, which is always a pain when you're one of those drivers kind of doing really well, and then a bit of rain, a little bit of late lap drama kind of comes in and spoils the party for you. And I've just put in the head where I can't remember where she finished overall, but I think it's, I'm always trying to see where the drivers who started a bit lower down the order, because we don't always get to see them on TV as much. It's always fun to see them come up through the ranks. Flush, well, she finished, oh, she finished P18. I couldn't remember where she started, but she did have some smooth overtakes. And I think that while it's obviously not where she wanted to be in that race, and she's had a bit of a tough season in a lot of regards, it's still nice to get that progress where you can and to highlight that, because I think that's something where I've noticed that definitely in IndyCar this year, you have drivers starting 25th, 24th, and make it up to 12th or 11th. But because they're not inside that top 10, you get less notice, or because of some dramatic stuff happening, you don't get the attention that you maybe deserve. And it's just worth a little shout out here or there, especially when you know how difficult it can be to overtake in places.
Yeah, it's a nice climb of 6 places. She started 24th in Spain. I've got that on the big spreadsheet. So yeah,
Not too bad then. But yeah,
pretty good return on
Barcelona
records.
was a pretty kind of Bahrain is Zandvoort, if we could use it in F1 terms. And luckily, in the same way that F1 improved dramatically, we did get that with Formula 3, and it wasn't a sign of things to come, more of an outlier race. Would you like to take us through Austria?
Yeah, Austria, a bit more of an interesting weekend. Browning qualifies at the front of the field, pole position, and then we jump straight into a sprint race, which unfortunate shunt from Montoya after a bit of a pinch from Dunn on the grass on the run down to turn four. It's a great spot really for sort of battling out as you go through sort of eight up the hill through the non-existent turn two, and then sort of as you start to go back down again, it's sort of everyone's fighting to get the good entry into turn four, the big hairpin at the top of the hill as you sort of come back down. But yeah, I remember Montoya being pinched and put wide, which was a bit unfortunate, really. But I think that was one of the ones that ended up with bits of car everywhere as well. So Solov P1 at the end of it, Stenshorn P2, Mansell P3. A great battle between all three of them from start to finish, really. This is one of the good things with the current F3 car, is it is, while it's not the best machinery in the world, it is really able to hold on to a battle the entire way through a sprint race, at least. You can probably just go hammer and tong at it for what, sort of 20 laps or so, depending on the circuit. And it is really, really quite fun. Nice clean action and close racing throughout. Actually, Austria is one of those circuits where it's either all hell breaks loose or you just get really good racing action. It's clean, it's tidy. And with the in the ex sprint race, at least, with the exception of the Montoya shunt, actually a really good outcome. Worth highlighting, especially because it's a track where, like we said, we get a lot of shunts and a lot of incidents happen, I think, is the best way of putting it for Austria. Sometimes racing,
And I think
sometimes.
Austria is also one of these race tracks where the weather often comes into play a lot, whereas here it didn't really for a change, but luckily it didn't impact the overall quality that we got. It's not a track where we've got to rely on it in this category to have some dramatic weather coming in. It can still hold its own with the junior categories, whereas F1, some years we get good races, some years we get less good races, but with F3, come rain or shine, we always get something entertaining, like you say, with that battle between Stolov, Stenshorn, and Mansell. Mansell being the driver up there that we perhaps expected more than the other two, but having that unexpected nature of those two coming into it was great fun. And if you're Mansell, you're going, I recognize you two. I don't often have to deal with you too much. Oh, unknown quantity. I get to have a bit of fun here. But the fact they keep it clean throughout was quite nice, especially from Stolov, because we know what he can be like.
Can be a little bit punchy, I think, is a fair way of putting things. We get to the
Yes.
feature race then for Austria, and second win of the season from Browning, and brought him to the top of the championship as well with this one. And of course, it was a win from pole, which is what you love to see, really, just getting a chance to get away and making the race your own. That's a proper sign of a driver that's got their head screwed on, isn't succumbing to the pressure through the opening stage. Mini Beganovic, Mansell, and Goethe all not actually that far behind, with a great battle for the rest of the podium places in following. Noel Leon had a fairly good opening stint, but puncture from contact sent him tumbling down the order. And Fornaroli with an excellent recovery drive up to P9 after starting way down the order. I probably have it
Which
in
I
my
think,
notes where he would have qualified as well.
yeah, I couldn't,
24th.
yeah, exactly. Very good recovery. And I think this is, I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this, you know that he's probably won the title, especially as we mentioned in the news. But the fact that he could put in that sort of a drive at a circuit that is quite short, quite frankly, for a racetrack, proves that he really does have that championship mentality. And as a driver who didn't win a race this year, these are the drives where he puts in that hard work and goes, yep, yeah, the qualifying may have been bloody awful, but I managed to get up there. And these little points here and there, they are absolutely crucial, especially when I don't think necessarily just deliberately they're not winning thing, but it's a difficult way to win a championship, but this is how you make that work for you.
Yeah, I mean, coming from 24th on the field up into not even sort of the top 15, but into the points is really quite phenomenal. And again, doing that in cars that aren't the best for overtaking around a circuit where you're always putting in steering input as well. There's not really a straight section bar the pit straights at Austria that's actually a true straight line. So you're constantly having to put in steering lock and try and make your way either around the outside or inside of another driver. Really, really good drive. Flush always seems to go well at this circuet. You've got notes in here for her. Worldie of a drive from her, flying through the field and
I
making up
don't think I
for a
wrote
ropey
these notes.
sprint.
I've never said that word in my life. That's more of a you thing.
Actually, that could well have been mine, actually. Yeah, worldie is usually a phrase from me and a sort of yeah, interesting moment there. Missed out by 0.4 of a second at the end on P10, so a sort of unfortunate result for her. There's a really good driver in there, but a stacked field just makes it hard to shine on the score sheet. So I wanted to actually note that for once. It's not going to be something I continue with when we get to the end of the podcast, but I think she's had her moments this season, but ultimately against the field she was competing in, it was a few moments too few.
Yeah, it's that unfortunate thing with Formula 3. It's the close competition is excellent, but it can also be to your detriment. And you only need a little bit of bad luck, a couple of DNFs or mechanical failures causing it or whatever. And a lot of these kind of and qualifying in particular, I think, is when it comes to her biggest weakness and has been for a while, where some drivers, like we've seen with Fuenaroli here, can qualify terribly and make it up. Other drivers, you can make a good bit of progress, but it's just unfortunately not good enough to get points. And it is the one thing that does frustrate me a little bit with Formula 3, that you've got such a larger field than you do in F1 and F2, but there isn't an extension of that point. So I'm not necessarily saying all the way down to 20th or anything, but 12th or 15th, maybe just to keep that a bit extra. I don't know how you'd maybe do that, but I think when you have that many more cars, it's something worth talking about at least. But in terms of driving, it's like your life depends on it. Mini was definitely doing that here. Had a really good fight with Boganovich and Mansell. Mansell just having kind of a very consistent time of it through Spain and Austria, just always there. Some really nice driving from them, a little bit like in the sprint race, nice clean, good action. And Mini really wanted to get there, didn't they?
Putting in a remarkable effort, really, for that feature race, considering where did Mini start for it? He started fourth, so just outside that podium position, and then scrapping away, making up two places. But again, when you're up in that field, it is so easy to sort of make up one place, lose two. We saw that again in Monza, the idea that you could sort of lunge past one guy, but then all of a sudden two come flying back past you again. So sort of especially around Austria, which can be decent for overtaking, even though it is all turns, you can make your way through at some points. You've got to defend a hell of a lot too. So being able to show that you can overtake and defend was the crucial thing from Mini there, and the way to look back at that one, which was a great result for him. Another DNF though for Montoya as well, actually having my notes for that one, a second nil point for him, or not even a race result, not even nil point, just no, nothing recorded.
Just know nothing at all. And like I was saying before, it was that race round that we needed in terms of it maybe wasn't the best Austria that we've seen, but it was very much an improvement, not that it was too difficult, from Spain and building in the right direction. And I think by the time we got to Silverstone, there was some frustration due to weather, due to various bits and pieces, but it felt like it was still building in that way. And this built the tension in a different way, but also made the home crowd quite happy throughout.
It's the only back-to-back pole we've seen set this season as well by Luke Browning. So he did it in Austria, and then coming into his home race, he does the job again and puts it on pole.
Not too shabby from him at all. Unfortunately, the sprint race was delayed a whopping amount of time. It was meant to be at 9:20 in the morning, happened at 6 in the evening due to the weather conditions, which I'll get to in a second. We didn't get much of a race, did we? I can't remember. It was just one of the ones that then got finished early because it then did start raining again, and they decided it was too much.
Yeah, it was sort of rescheduled, and there was a bit of racing, but then there was an early incident between Esterson and Goethe, I think it was. And yeah, Lindblad ended up leading the rest of the race and claimed his third win of the season from that one. But yeah, it was Yeah, so I've pretty much finished on the safety car, I think, is my memory of that one.
Yeah, just again, so long ago, and Formula 2 is having similar issues as well. It's kind of, it all blurs a little bit at points, but great for Lindblad again. He's not going to complain that he gets to win, especially at home for him. No Leon in P2. Zagazeta, the favourite story from this portion of the weekend for me, in P3, claiming Peru's first ever podium in Formula 3. Just simply lovely. A lot of collisions going on around the place. Left, right, and centre, which obviously didn't help things. All of that nice, close, clean action from Austria went out the window here. And interestingly, Solov not part of that. Him and Mini did keep things interesting with some close racing towards the end of the race. And Stenchorn famously, for us anyway, he was not allowed to take part at Silverstone because of basically not asking permission to race there before Formula 3 raced there for a different category. So James Wharton, I believe, stepped in for him and finished in the top 15 on debut, so not too shabby for him. But essentially, a little bit like Franco Colapinto at the moment, he's in for a very short amount of time, had absolutely no pressure on his shoulders. Just go out there and do the best you can with what you've got, and if it goes well, excellent. If it doesn't matter. You're not back in the car next weekend anyway.
He was car 15. He finished in P18.
Oh, Fintan. Hi.
But yeah, it was actually a race that went the full distance under racing conditions. It was how they crossed the line, because looking at the timing at the end of it, there's a couple of big spaces through that one. So I think there was definitely scraps going on. But yeah, Lindblad made his way past Noel Leon. Another driver that's had a bit of an underrated season, actually, Noel Leon. I think we'll definitely touch on him possibly in a bit to come, but pretty
He was
good.
one to watch, I think, from what I recall when we previewed the season. He'd come with a lot of praise from the other junior categories he'd been in before then. So it was nice to see. I think, again, it's a little bit like some of the other drivers where they've had underrated seasons. It's just been because of all the other drama happening around them, not because of anything they've necessarily done wrong themselves. It's just they've got on with business at hand and go, guys. And I'm like, yeah, we know you're there. Like, no. Actually doing pretty well. Like, shut up. Like, no, pay attention to me. It's like we've got you now, Leon, don't worry.
Because he hadn't come from Freca, he'd come from Euro Formula Open, which is a bit of an interesting way in, but he'd won the championship there and pretty concisely, with sort of only one, two, three retirements. The rest of the time he was on the podium or within the points at least. There's only a few other times he's not even on the podium. So yeah, really interesting sort of run up to F3 from him, and then he carried that momentum on, which was nice to see. Feature race at Silverstone. Typically chaotic. Lindblad did the double though and won again, which was fantastic to see. Red Bull junior driver, British driver. It's what you want at your home race, really, is to be on the top step of the podium. And a split field saw half the grid on wets, half the others on inters, trying to capitalize on the ever-changing conditions. It was a bit of a weird one through the Silverstone Grand Prix weekend. Dunn struck again with some absolutely unacceptable dangerous driving as he went off track and rejoined at high speed, launching his car into the air and forcing Meganovic to swerve out the way to avoid him, plowing into Flersch in the process, who crashed out of the race after a relatively decent drive up the order on an alternate strategy. Again, making
This
things work
is
we
the
don't
annoying
expect.
bullshit I keep talking about. It's like you don't know when these opportunities are going to come your way. You try and take advantage of them, and then some bugger launches himself through the air and eats himself into you, and you go, "Why?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to enjoy myself, and I'm trying to just get up the order and mind my own business. Why did you do this? Kind of,
similar
why were
happened
you
in
watching
Spa.
Roy Nissany from a couple of years ago? That's not the inspiration you want to be taking."
Yeah, Roy Nissany launched himself over the curbs into Vale chicane. But yeah, it's Flersch's luck struck again in Spa in a similar thing where she was wiped out by someone else, which was, again, not what you want. Dunn somehow managed to keep going after that and then crashed out again after trying to avoid something
With
with
another
Montoya.
driver
Yeah, so
that's
weirdly a bit
having
of
not too much
karma.
luck.
Lindblad, Mini and Voisin cleared the field behind them and just sort of left a lot of them to scrabble away. And yeah. Latter claiming his first podium in F3, Callum Voisin as well, which is, I think, Callum Voisin, I think I'm right in saying home race. No, he came, that's feet sprint there. Yeah, a home race for Callum Voisin as well. So, pretty tidy result there. So,
Yeah.
all good things.
We did well at Silverstone across all three categories. I think it was just Antonelli spoiling the party a little bit for us in terms of nationality in Formula 2. He chose just the wrong weekend to wake up for us. But we did well in the F3 and the F1. And I think Silverstone never really disappoints, does it,
No.
regardless? I think we get frustrated with it at times. And I think to go back to the sprint with the delay for it, it's the same conversation we have in Spa in Formula 2, I think, with the rain. And I know that everyone's trying to be very safety conscious. We've had a lot of bad accidents with weather in a variety of circuits over the last few years. But for me, I still think that how else are these drivers going to learn how to race in these conditions? You don't necessarily have to do the full race, but at least let them go out and see for themselves. And it's the old adage from, what is it, the 70s and the 80s, when Birdie was a judge, and saying if it's too wet, like, no one's making them drive. They can all stop whenever they want. You saw that famously with Niki Lauda in Japan. No one, he decided it was not worth it. No one forced him into it. James Hunt stayed out there, and the big balls helped him to claim that title, but no one forced anyone to do anything. And safety is as much your responsibility as the driver as it is for everyone else's. So I think it frustrates me, because I can understand obviously why they do it, but I think this is maybe the wrong way to go about it. And maybe, just as famously someone said, just drive a bit slower.
Yeah, I think that there's a balance to be struck as to sort of racing safely in the rain and at the same time sort of not expecting junior drivers to absolutely hammer it into the wall every time a bit of rain arrives. There is a balance to be struck and found, and I think eventually we'll find it, and it'll be interesting to see how the new cars as well cope with the wet conditions and what progresses from that. But the wet conditions do give us an interesting race. They give us some new drivers in the top 10. We saw Smith and Wisnicki scoring their best results in date to date in Formula 3. I mean, when you look at where some of the drivers started for this race, Gabriele Mini started 14th on the grid, came home second. Tommy Smith started 26th to come home fourth. Pietro Wisnicki started 30th and came home fifth. And then Nikita Bedrin 24th to come home ninth. Like, it is a great race where if you're able to get your sort of a feel for what's going on underneath you, if you're able to communicate that accurately to the pit wall and tell them what you want, and then make your tires do the best that you can get out of the sort of Pirellis for that car, that's a sign of a relatively sort of switched on driver and one that's going to develop quite nicely. And I think certainly under those conditions, one that's going to be really well suited to things like WEC, where you get the sort of rain coming and going and coming and going at things like Le Mans. You've got to be the driver that's sort of knowing how to handle sort of changing conditions, changing your tires, and getting the most out of a car that might not be set up to a condition and fighting your way through the field. So, yeah, a really interesting race when you look at it and how it panned out and what it could spell for people's careers as well moving forward.
Yeah, Lindblad as well. We'll talk more about him later, but definitely a way for him to. He was already on the map, but just re-establish himself on the map, and I suppose claim a little more territory on there, if we're going to keep using that for an analogy a bit further. Budapest, meanwhile, different again. Kind of, I didn't get to see all of this as live as I wanted it to, due to Formula E duties that particular weekend, but it looked like a good time, and especially if you're AIX. Van Hoeken claimed pole position ahead of all of that, but in the sprint race, Bedrin claimed first place for the team, which was just brilliant. And then Ethan Pruzak was in P2 in kind of a, I don't want to say a rare moment of brilliance for him, but he has had just a very interesting season. And we saw that in Monza in particular. He was just all over the place. It reminded me a little bit of Professor Lupin in Prisoner of Azkaban, just going, oh, he's having a really rough night. He just seems to be ill there everywhere. And you're just like, I like him, but I'm not sure why. And just there's something crazy and chaotic about it that you hope he does better. And also, just for the sake of the fact that we have to learn how to pronounce that name and get it done properly, which I'm surprised the commentary didn't mess it up more, to be honest. We've seen them mess up simpler names in years gone by, so the fact that they managed to get this perfect was quite amusing to me.
Mean,
Beganovic, though, P3 for Prema to finish off that podium quickly, with Mansell again up there, P5, Boysen P6. Tight little sprint race, I think, and AIX, kind of their rebranding actually worked for a change.
yeah, I mean, with a bit of practice, saying the name Sanipal in for Pruvazac actually comes quite naturally, but it takes, yeah. But
This is
he's
going to be
had.
a pub quiz question to see who we can catch out with good extra point of spelling.
Don't say, I'm going to write. I've actually got open one of my tabs at the moment, is the 2024 end of year quiz. So I will be putting that on after this. But yeah, I think Sandepol has become a really interesting driver to watch through the season because he's developed. It's not been consistent, it's not been monumental, but he's certainly come along and actually sort of improved as he's gone. So that's been really promising to see. And again, that's what you're supposed to see with the feeder series, is drivers getting better and learning how to do bits and making their opportunities when they can. And again, it's not like he lucked into that position and just sort of shot up through the field because of chaos. He'd qualified outright P10. And obviously, I think a reverse grid really helps a bit when it comes to those things. So starting P3, but then making a step up and going one place further. Again, when you've got the drivers around you shuffling around, Bedrin, Beganovic, people that at points were sort of in contention for a championship, certainly the latter, and Tramnitz as well, hot on your heels. You've got the likes of Voisin and Mansell, people that have been on the podium already this season behind you. And you keep a calm head and just sort of bang it in, come home with some points, P2. You're like, that's all right. We've done all right there at Sanipol, haven't we? Yeah, we have. If he talks to himself like that, I don't know. But yeah.
That's the only thing we can assume until we get to talk to him on the podcast. So we're just going to have to go with it for now.
Come
The
on,
feature
have a
race,
chat with us if you
the feature
listen.
race as well, was one of these ones where three different drivers again, one of which expected a second, not unexpected, and a third kind of in a similar vein there, but potentially not in the order that we saw them. Fornaroli claiming P3, one of the closest times he got to a win this year. Noel Leon in P2 and Solov in P1, essentially the closest he was going to get to a home race win, being from Bulgaria, and that being as close as we're going to get there anytime soon.
Was really
Mansell again
nice.
up there, P4, Voisin again up there, P6, a really solid weekend for the pair of them. Not a solid weekend at all for Browning, Dunn, Shields, Mini, all Lindblad, all out of the points, the latter with a DNF, which quite the turnaround after Silverstone. I suppose that's the price you pay for being too good at your home race. You're going to get clobbered next time out, regardless of what kind of driver you are. It's just the Formula 3 way, it feels like.
I think with, I'll say with Solov, it was actually really nice seeing the huge amount of support for him at the Hungarian Grand Prix weekend. Fans out in the stands as early as the F3 races, which is weirdly early actually, every
Especially on a
weekend
Sunday.
on a Sunday. They're there, they've got the flags out, they're cheering on their driver, and you go, I love seeing the fact that they've got that support, they've got the fan base, and he's proving to be a relatively tidy driver, and I hope that he's got more of a career to
Yeah,
come because.
I was going to say this is a driver where we have criticized him a lot in the past because of his overly aggressive driving and seeming impatience with situations around him. We've just said you can probably get what you want if you just calm down a little bit and didn't try and just bulldoze your way through it like a bull in a china shop. And through clearly listening to us and probably from a few other people as well, he's kind of turning out a bit better this year, and it was nice to see that. I mean, there have been flashes and moments where we've seen Solov of old, but it's nice that those fans turned out and he didn't do what he would have used to have done, especially I think Budapest last year or the year before. I'm trying to remember, there were instances where you go, oh, that's not good, and that was very unnecessary. And the fact that he was able to turn it around in the space of 12 months, let's say, and give all of those fans that are coming over from his home country something to actually celebrate about, and it's not just celebrating for the sake of this is the closest we're going to get to be able to have them at a home race, is really nice as well to see. And I like it when we get that from countries where we don't really see much motorsport talent come from them. You have to go really in country, and even then, it's probably usually rallying in particular and kind of local rallies where you'd see a lot of the motorsport come from. You look at Peru, you look at Paraguay, you look at Bulgaria, in this instance. It's nice to see these countries popping up and giving us maybe not an F1 caliber worthy driver, but just showing that there is potential there. And that's all we really wanted. And it was just nice to see people from those countries that we haven't seen either before or in a long time get that opportunity on such a big stage.
And not squandering it, really making it shine.
Yeah.
It was relatively interesting, but a straightforward feature race. Great drive from a variety of people, but again, sort of not one of the most exciting, but certainly one of the most interesting to watch when it comes to driver development and seeing who's actually making the steps forward and making the most of what they can put together across a weekend. It's not the flash, bang, crash, wallop one. It's the one that if you sit down with a piece of paper and your statistics and you go, who's actually made the most of this weekend? That's the one the talent spotters are looking at and going,
And I
okay.
think this is something we've had, and I've been more appreciative of definitely this season across a bunch of different series. I mean, you think of F1 in Zandvoort, you think of IndyCar in Portland. These are races where not a lot really happened, but it makes you appreciate the endurance side of it and what happens when nothing really goes wrong. You've just got drivers having to kind of compete against themselves and a racetrack and not get caught out and be in complete focus. It was most evident, obviously, with Leclerc in Monaco back in the early stages of the F1 season. That was the ultimate kind of endurance race outside of being an endurance race, and this was one of those, and does make you sit back and appreciate racing from a different perspective, which is always quite nice and shows the variety that you can have sometimes, and shows as well how, whilst this was not the most exciting race, it showed Spain how to be interesting, which it failed to do.
Yes, yeah, it was still an interesting race and one you're watching going, oh, who's going to come through, who's doing what, as opposed to just they're going round and round in circles. We'll move on to a weekend that was back to being interesting in the typical Formula 3 sense, Spa.
This boy's in clean pole position. He was going off a really strong midpoint of the season, well, midpoint end of the season, really. He kind of finishing really strong here with some solid results and then getting pole position here. But yeah, we got into kind of more classic Formula 3 territory, which I think is appropriate considering we're at a classic circuit with Spa. Esterson crashing almost immediately at the top of Eau Rouge on lap one, only kind of bettered, I want to say, in the F2 by Behrmann, kind of crashing out before turn one, kind of sitting there going, I can do that sooner. Unfortunate for Esterson, but Spa, I'm just glad it wasn't an Eau Rouge kind of incident that we have seen more recently with other series. It wasn't too bad by comparison. Lindblad went from P27, though, to P16 in the first half of lap one before the safety car came out because of Esterson. And we're talking about drivers to look out for later. If that isn't just even worthy of a little bit of a conversation, I don't know what is, because that was insane.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mad one, really. It was great from Lindblad making that pace through. Just all of that sprint race. For a sprint race, it's compacted. You've got a limited chance to get your action in and get your moves done.
Particularly at Spa, I feel like sprint races for feeder series at Spa are always a bit frustrating for me because it's just like 10 laps and you're like, that's nothing. I know
Yeah.
it's Spa, but it feels pathetic. But then you get something like this and you think, oh, please no more safety cars. This could be quite a corker.
Yes, yeah, you please no more safety cars, but also at the same time, safety cars breed safety cars. It's Formula 3, as the
Yes.
famous phrase often goes. But yeah, it was, yeah, first half of one lap to go make up, what's that, nine, no, 11 places essentially is bonkers. And there is a really interesting driver in Lindblad, and I can't wait to see him start making moves up. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him make the move to Formula 2 for next season, actually. I think
Wouldn't be
there is
surprising,
enough of a push by Red Bull to get him up there. He earned their respect this year, and I think it's going to be a bit of
go
a.
on, partner with Hadjar. I want to hear the team radio already.
Oh, you know it's going to be spicy if they put those two together, especially if they're in a car that's really quite good, but has occasional moments of just sort of F2-ery. Let's put it that way. Yeah, just oh, so it was one of those fantastic all-time F3 sprint races. You sort of look back on it and go, God damn, that was incredible from some of you guys. Well done.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see Begovic, for example, a driver where there was a lot of hype around him a year or two ago, maybe, and he's not fizzled out as such, but just other drivers have come into the picture, and he's kind of doing the best he can to keep some of the spotlight on him, and taking the lead from a driver like Mini on the restart down the Kemmel Straight is a great way to do that, especially then going on to win with Mini in P2, so managing to hold him off, and Leon kind of claiming P3 in a very cheeky way, after stealing it from Tramnitz on the last lap of the race. Sure, not too chuffed if you're Tramnitz, but cracking if you're not Leon. And then you've got a four-way battle for E4 at the end as well between Ramos, Browning, and Megatuniv, and Montoya, surprisingly, not having a terrible time of it. So that was quite nice to see as well. It was suitably chaotic and, as we said, classic Formula 3 towards the end of it.
Yeah, it's another one of those weekends where we had drivers sitting out though, because Nicholas Sollov skipping out on this one
Yes.
because of his suspension. He was replaced by Tuukka Tapanen, a Ferrari junior driver, interesting enough, who's currently in Freca. So he's not doing too badly though. I think he's second in Freca at the moment, which isn't too terrible. And
It's always interesting when this sort of thing happens, though, because we don't run too many hours in the day and we have enough trouble calling as much motorsport as we do, which is already probably more than the average person anyway. And then when you get a suspension like this with Solov and you go, took an opponent, who the is that? Quickly, Google, help me. Am I meant to be impressed with this result in F3, or am I not? What are we going for here? And we had this in Monza as well later on. And I think it's just nice that we get these drivers to come in for a round or two here and there, and they get that opportunity because again, it's always the drivers. I feel like your Lindblad, your Antonellis, your Piastris. You only ever hear about them. It, if you're anyone who's still doing decently, but you're not on that level, it can be very difficult to hear about you. So at least with these drivers, even if they're not necessarily on that caliber, when they make their way up into Formula 3 and Formula 2 or wherever else, you go, wait a minute, I know this guy. He was at Spa last year. Interesting. Okay. It gives you, as kind of the neutral that we are, because we essentially don't know most of the F3 drivers when they come in for the first time, because we don't have enough time to be watching all of them four series as much as we might like to. It gives you that kind of connection, I suppose, and you want that driver to do well just because you recognize the name, just because you need somewhere to land. And when you've got 30 drivers, two-thirds of which are probably new, you need whatever you can get there. And
Yeah.
I don't remember necessarily a negative aspect. I mean, the feature race, I know, didn't go his way, but I don't, there was nothing about that that made me think, oh, I don't like you for this. So it's, if he turns that up next year, I'm like, okay, I know this guy. Let's give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean P13 in qualifying, P14 in the sprint, so only losing one race at a circuit in a car you're not particularly familiar with, not the car that is. He had already, weirdly enough, raced this circuit in Fracca, but obviously he might have asked
But
the
he was
FIA
allowed to
for
do that
permission to do it,
potentially.
so was allowed
Yeah.
to replace the guy who wasn't. Strange. Anyway, yeah, he's second in Frecca at the moment, so not having a bad time of things. But he picked up through the season there as well. So hopefully, this sort of relatively bum weekend of a 14th and a retirement in F3 won't be too much of a. I wouldn't say there was a stain on his personal record, but they are. Yeah, they're not going to be the highlights of this year's career for him. But at the same time, like you said, it's great that he's already got that little one step advantage on the sort of 20 odd drivers that are going to appear in Formula 3 next year. And we all go, oh, we know who he is, though. We know he's actually pretty sound. We'll keep an eye on him. And if you're the likes of the Ferrari Driver Academy, which he's part of, or one of the teams that buys Ferrari engines, let's say, you might be going, interesting. Keep an eye on him.
We shall watch your career with great interest.
Very much.
The feature race, meanwhile, was frustrating in a lot of ways if you're a lot of drivers, because again, it's a case of just trying to mind your own business and not being able to. Mini particular spinning round into T1 immediately, putting all the way down in P29, again, potentially jeopardizing his championship chances at that point as we're viewing it, and ultimately did. A close battle then between Boys and Montoya and Fornaroli. That got interrupted as Stenchorn and Toponen had their own separate incidents at the same part of the circuit, which was quite amusing, considering that was like, oh, what have they done? Oh, nothing. They just both, oh, okay, interesting. But that pulled out the safety car. We lost about half a lap before the next one came as Loke, another driver who just onto the throttle, because I'm like, what has she done to offend all these other drivers? Very, very rookie move on Flourish going into Brussels and took her out as a result. Frustratingly managing to keep going himself, which I always, it's exactly what we had at Silverstone. It's like, well, how can you launch your car into another driver and then you somehow are fine, and yet the person you've driven into is then out and they're going, what have I done?
Also, doing it into the Bruxelles hairpin. It's not a relatively high speed corner on the circuit. In fact, it's one of the lowest speed corners on the circuit after La Source. You've come out of Le Combe, you turn, point it down the hill. You can see you've got Bruxelles ahead of you. Yes, it's a great spot for sending it on, but at the same time, you shouldn't really have a closing speed of that high and certainly not enough to completely obliterate Sophia Flörsch. Yeah, big rookie move from him.
Tell this to Mansell as well, because in exactly the same spot on the next restart, Lindblad spun around by him, and he was out of the race,
It was
which
quite
then
funny
did
actually
lead to
watching the two
some.
of them stood at the side of the circuit, both clearly furious, but furious for
That
the
was
same
what I was
reason,
going to
but not
say,
talking
because
to
you
each
can
other.
see that Flörsch is trying to just be in her own mind, and Lindblad, it's very, I can't remember, there's various memes where there's a guy trying to talk to a
Oh, it's the
girl,
guy in the club talking to a girl. Yeah. It's basically,
and
he's
she's just got
basically.
no interest whatsoever, and he's trying to fume and rant to someone. She's gonna have no, like, I'm having my own problems over here. Leave me alone, buddy.
It's clearly like a Red Bull thing of just sort of being a top tier yapper, because we see it with Max Verstappen as well.
Yeah.
He's a great one for
And
just
agile.
making conversation. Hadjar, again, another great yapper. And then all of a sudden, you're stuck at the side of the circuit having an absolutely torrid time. And then who should come skittering across the gravel towards you? But a very chatty Arvid Lindblad, who's annoyed that he's out of the race, but has a lot to say about it. And you're like, please leave
And
me
again,
alone.
you just look at that from an age front. You've got this 23-year-old with this teenager going, "Oh, for God's sake, shut up, man! I don't." And we're in very different places right now. Boyer as well crashed two corners after that. He was gone, so we didn't really get much racing in the end, which Roizen probably didn't care about at all because it was Roden's first victory since Alex Lynn. Remember him? Won for them at Spa a decade ago with Montoya in P2, and finally. And Fornaroli sneaking in P3. And as a result, all of that, Prema probably didn't complain too much about the whole race because they managed to seal the team's championship. But a very frustrating feature race. Kind of classic Spa, kind of classic not. But most definitely Formula 3.
Yeah, very Formula 3 in all the usual ways. And of course, Prema have already sealed the type team championship. There is one title left to bag as everything moves on towards Monza. And, well, the important information going into Monza was also the fact that Oliver Goerther, no longer in Formula 3, promoted to Formula 2 thanks to Colapinto graduating to Formula 1. And this meant that Noah Stromstedt, like our fourth new guy in the series this year, was stepping in to replace Goerther at Campos for the final round of the season, making his Formula 3 debut. The Danish driver competed in Formula 4 UAE last year, as well as in Spanish F4 with Campos, and competed in just five races in 2024 across the Formula Regional Middle East Series and Freca Championship. So he's sort of been hopping around, an interesting pick, but guess he came along at the right time. He's not the most interesting pick we've seen arrive in a feeder series this year. We'll get to that when we
For
talk
very short
Formula 2.
notice.
Yeah, well, very short notice. We'll get to the one I'm thinking of when we get to Formula 2. His dad may or may not own Booking.com, which may be the reason why he's able to afford to just appear in Formula 2. Anyway, Formula 3 qualifying at Monza. We tried a new qualifying format as used in Monaco, halving the field to cut the toe. Esterson posted a 2 minute 10.419, and then Stuka and well, he posted a 2 minute 10, and then it's basically they all start trying to form up a queue coming out of the Lesmos, and then Stuka is ploughed into by Van Hopen as they come around Lesmo 2, and it all becomes a bit of a melee. I can't remember which half of the field it was that did that. One half of it did it all right, one half of it screwed around and found out. And Fauna only got pole position. So yeah, a bit of a weird situation that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not against trying, obviously, new qualifying formats. You've got to see if they're the better option sometimes. But I think when it comes to something like this, you've just got to penalize people for queuing in the pits. You know, just like at F1, we've told them how many times not to do it, and they keep doing it. And yet we seem to go, "Oh, don't do that." I'm like, "Well, are you going to punish them?" "No." "Well, we're just going to keep doing it then." It's like, the only change the format, you just need to get harsh with the penalties.
There needs to be a, it
But
needs to go
Fornaroli
to
just
the,
did what he did anyway, and you kind of think, well, if anyone's going to get it, it's going to be him. So that makes perfect sense.
only a second pole of the season, interestingly. I think they need to bring in, similar to F1, the minimum lap time or maximum lap time that you're allowed to achieve, and that would stop this sort of dawdling and queuing up and waiting and waiting and waiting. And eventually you just see drivers that are bored of it just pull out and sod off into the distance, hoping that no
With
one
Max
notices
Verstappen.
they've pulled out and gone for it, thinking, I hope they don't notice and don't try and steal my toe.
I'm too quick, you can't see me.
Yeah, just hoping that no one follows them. But yeah, it was a Monza qualifying session for a feeder series. I think that's the best way of summing it up. And it led us perfectly into the sprint race. Safety car out on lap two due to a collision between Noel Leon and Nikita Bedrin after Smith tagged Leon a bit scrappy.
Yeah, I think we could definitely tell if we didn't know already that this was the final round of the season and that everyone was determined to leave it all out on the field. Unfortunately, some drivers were a little more aggressive in that notion than others, and it had safety car results, which tells you how well it went. Especially as we had a second safety car on lap 13, as Wisniewski and Esterson came together in turn one, pretty much like Leon and Bedrin did. That was a bit of a racing incident for me, but yeah, just unfortunate, I think, on the whole there. And even more unfortunate for Mansell after having such a strong kind of entered the season up to this point, he got a puncture at Ascari, essentially ending his comeback drive after having had to start in the pit lane due to his gearbox being stuck in first gear when they came around for the formation up the first time, which meant they had to do a second one. Very unfortunate for him. Tramnitz, however, really, really showing up quite nicely. Better late than never as a rookie, finished in P1. Montoya somehow got into the P2, and kind of a very, very odd thing for him, always we get to that later, and ran off in P3. And that's all obviously meant that no Mini, no Fornaroli, no nothing. Championship goes down to the final race of the season on Sunday, which is exactly what we want. And coming into the feature race, we knew that it would get decided here. We have seen some interesting ways that this has been decided in the past, but luckily this was one of the more interesting ways it could get decided. And going back to the news of the brand new car for next year for closer racing, good luck beating this one in terms of closeness, because that's going to be very tough to beat. We'll get to that in a second though, because on lap four we did have another safety car, which involved championship contenders still at that point drowning, involved in a crash at Ascari, which then Zolov, Zagazita, Flash, God damn it, Wisnicki, and Shield all involved there. That was kind of a separate thing. It was kind of really unclear what happened. We didn't see as much of that on the replays as we wanted it to. Zolov was the one that kind of did his own thing, and then everyone else just kind of got caught up in their own thing, it
Yeah,
appears.
Browning, I think, drops it first. People swerve to avoid him. Some go around on the track, some take to the gravel. And I think it's then Solov that, as he comes back onto the circuit, potentially collects a few other drivers. The guy that swung around the other side of Browning then loses it on the exit of Ascari, causing a second set of incidents. So essentially, Browning loses it, he's out. But the two guys or three people that try and avoid him then cause incidents of their own. So he's the spark that ignites it, and then everyone quite literally spirals out of control from there. And as a result, we saw one guy spin and results in six people
It's
retiring.
that unfortunate thing where you try and avoid the chaos, and as a result of you trying to avoid the chaos, get caught up in the chaos, and there's not much you can do. And it's just such a pain in the ass if you're one of those drivers, because you can only do the best you can in that situation. There's no real right or wrong thing, because you don't ha you can't see what's going to be the right thing. You've just got to kind of hope for the best in some ways. And we saw in the F1 as well that dust that got flung onto the track at points. If you've got even a little bit of that visibility then when you're going at some of the speeds they're going at, especially around Ascari, good luck to you. It's kind of luck of the draw at that point, and none of those drivers unfortunately had it. Jon and Estersen as well, they came together but were able to keep going, even though Estersen did then DNF. He really just did not have a good end of the season at all when you look at Spa and Monza. Very unfortunate to him, for him rather. But then it was pretty much a straight fight between Mini and Fornaroli for the end, with Mansell having this Nicholas Latifi style role, but luckily a lot less dramatic as that, if we look at the 2021 championship as the comparison there.
Yeah, I think that it was a good opening run from Fornaroli, fighting when he didn't need to. He saved his tyres, which I think was the thing that paid off. Mansell was on a stormer, though, sort of with a constant back and forth with Mini that drew them at points closer to and past Fornaroli, and at points let Fornaroli come back past them. The closeness of it all was incredible, really, and the fact that they were able to sort of keep that fight going lap after lap after lap without overcooking tyres, without coming together in any sort of meaningful way. It was just really, really good. And eventually, what it led to, though, was Mini getting ahead, and then Mansell gets between Mini and Fornaroli. So Mini is sort of basically in second place, and Fornaroli is too far back to get the points difference that he needs. And then on the final lap going into Parabolica, Fornaroli sends it on the brakes and inside Mansell. Mansell gives him the room, and this is where I genuinely think Mansell is a quite a conscientious racing driver when he puts the effort into it, because he's paying attention, he knows what he's doing here, and he knows who's around him. He sees Fornaroli coming, he defends the line, he holds his line through Parabolica. He doesn't just sort of get on the brakes, get out of the way, and make it easy. He holds his line, but he knows that Fornaroli's got the inside and is going to have the drive coming out of it. And Fornaroli just clogs it on the exit of Parabolica and just has the run going down to the line, and that's it, job done.
I think that's what you
Negative.
say with Mantle. He knows that one way or the other he's going to lose that position, so put up a bit of a fight, but there's no point putting too much of one, because arguably when you've got a driver like Fornaro in that mindset with everything else going on, sometimes you know that the only way you'd stop him from getting past you is driving into him, but obviously that's not going to do you any good, so what's the bloody point?
And the
So
other thing
he
to
did
remember
as
is
much as he could do there.
finishing in the points where he did as well. There's no point him binning it into the kitty litter at that point either, because it also meant he moved up a step in the championship as well. So it was worth him sort of being that little bit more metered, but still sort of making it a proper race. And yeah, Mega Tunif over the line first, followed by Mini and then Fornaroli. The points gap could not be closed, and the Italian in the Trident is crowned victorious. And then post-race, Mini is disqualified for incorrect tyre pressures, stripping him of his points from that weekend. Fornaroli moves up one step on the podium, Mansell into the points further still, and on the podium, Bob's your uncle, championship decided.
Well, I was so glad that Mini didn't win, just because that would have been such a ball ache for everyone, never mind the drivers and the teams themselves, but for us as fans, we've seen this too regularly at the moment in the last couple of years, drivers getting disqualified from podium positions, never mind wins, and it just ruining things. And we see this a lot in F2 and F3, I feel like, as well, in particular. And it's just so frustrating, especially when it's been frustrating for us whenever it's been kind of the minor points playing positions, never mind further up the field. And so I'm glad that as much as it was probably going to smart on Mini, it would have smarted even more if he had won. And it was kind of the lesser of two evils there. You'd rather get disqualified from a race than get disqualified from a race where you were champion for 2 hours and then it goes to your rival. That would have been awful.
It was, yeah, arguably the best position to have been in to lose it, if that makes sense. It would have been even more crippling had it gone another way. I mean, even then, still not winning the championship clearly hit him hard. And again, I still feel sorry for him. He let it all show when he got into the Assembly era post race into Parc Fermé. And I like that, though. That's a driver that's genuinely committed
And so you saw a
to what
nice
he's
moment with
doing.
him and his dad, I think, didn't you?
There was a great moment with him with his dad, him with his team, his trainer, just sort of genuinely sort of holding him and going, no, what you've done this season has still been amazing. That stands.
But
But
he
then,
should be in F2 next year as well.
oh, almost certainly, as much as I don't want to sort of belittle Fornaroli's achievements, I think Mini has proven that as a racer, as a driver, as a talent, he's worthy and ready of that step up. There will be other drivers that make the move that we may be sort of besmirch for not being ready, but I don't think we can level that accusation at Gabriele Mini. He has proven it this season with his talent, his dedication, his the way that he puts together a race weekend has just been so professional that I don't think we can deny him that opportunity to move up to F2.
No, not at all. Which neatly leads us into our winners and spinners, and I'll kick things off here because whilst you have said, can it be anyone but Fornaroli, I suggest, yes, it can be, and that is Arvid Lindblad. Rookie season, finishes P4 with 113 points, 4 wins to his name in Bahrain, Spain, and Silverstone, with the latter obviously being a clean sweep of the weekend for the first time in F3 history, all at just over 16 years old. Not too shabby at all.
No,
Not
rookie of
too
the year.
shabby.
Yeah, really,
Yeah,
really
no
solid
shit,
performance.
rookie of the
Yeah, highest
year.
rookie. But no, it was overall, though, a genuinely phenomenal performance from Arvid Lindblad throughout the season. Again, it was a drive befitting of someone a little more senior than him. And again, like I said with Mini, you could tell there's this enthusiasm and passion and drive for what he's doing as well. And that's really what you want to see. With some of the other drivers, they're annoyed when they don't win. But with Lindblad, you've got the feeling that he's annoyed when he's not given his best. And that, I think, is the difference. It's other drivers annoyed when things don't go their way. Fine. Lindblad's annoyed at himself when he
It's a
hasn't
bit
done
like
everything in
Piastri.
his right. Yeah, there's a very unique mindset to it, and it's one that I really respect and appreciate seeing in motorsports as well. It's quite fun.
You did, however, go with Fornaroli as your winner, which is perfectly understandable considering he was champion.
Yeah, first guy to win an F3 title without winning a race. I think you've got to give some
Consistency
kudos
is
to that.
key.
Consistency is key. We always say this about the feeder series, and he has gone and damn well proven it in its most like bonkers way of doing it. Monza was also a bonkers race for him. And obviously, let's not overlook Austria, 24th on the grid through to 9th in the feature. It's also confirmed, like we've said, Invicta F2 in 2025. it's coming up Milhouse for the guy, and I think it's only right that it does, because if you can get a team that just makes him that little bit faster, you've already got the consistency. All you've got to do is just tease that little bit more out of him, and you're going to have an absolute weapon on your hands, and one that's going to be really interesting. I think as much as we look at Antonelli and go, he's Italy's next top driver, if you're looking in your mirrors, Kimi, you'll spot a very fast approaching Fornaroli.
I think this is something else I just wanted to say on him as well, in that obviously he's a winner because he's just become a champion, but he's also become a winner without winning. So he's a very interesting prospect to watch over the next few years, and hopefully we get to see him in Formula One if he continues on this trend. And if he gets to Formula One, he's a very unique double threat, because depending on where he goes and who he's partnered with, he could make a perfect number two driver. For a driver that is dominant or is more akin to winning, and at the same time be this very Jaws-like threat of you hear the music but you don't see it until it's too late, because you wonder how the hell he's managed to get into this high position that he's been in. A little bit like Bortoleto, I want to say, in Formula 3 last year. We got to Monza and went, how the hell is he actually in lead of the championship again? I've not been watching this season, but I've blinked and I've missed this performance. How has this happened? And by quite a margin as well. So I think that could be quite a unique prospect. So I don't think we've ever really had that, or if we have, it's been a long time since we've had that sort of a driver. And when you can be that interesting double threat of perfect rear gunner, but also I can turn those guns on you if you're not careful enough, that could be an interesting thing come 27, 28.
And that sort of rear gunner turning the guns on you is something we're seeing with Piastri, and it's proving to be a very
Yes.
interesting threat, and I'm enjoying seeing it. And also, I think, certainly on that note, I think a lot of people have forgotten that actually you're supposed to overtake your teammate. One of your closest rivals is your teammate. If you can't beat them, who else are you supposed to beat? And especially if you're in the McLaren at the moment, which is the top car in the field, your only rival, your only direct rival is your teammate. And at the moment,
Yes.
Piastri's sort of doing that. Anyway, back to F3. Spinners, I'll hop onto my one quickly because I know you might have a rebuttal. That's why I've put numbers in this. I've been statistical as well
I
as
think my
logistical.
rebuttals have kind of already come in some regards, because I forgot how much bad luck she had in
She
these two
has had
races.
some atrocious luck, and I did also write down that she'd had some atrocious luck at points as well. So there is that caveat to carry with this. It'll probably also given away who I'm thinking of. Sophia Flörsch, second lowest of all the full-time drivers in 29th against her teammates. She's off the ball. Smith gets lucky with his fourth at Silverstone, boosting him way up the order. I will give him that. And giving him an average finish of 19.1 over Sophia's 19.3. In sprints, it's 20.4 versus 22.4 in Sophia's favor. So she's better there against Smith. Against everyone's favorite palindrome, Noel Leon, though, also a teammate, 9.1 in sprints and 13.5 in features, just a far better batting average. Same team, same car, supposedly, and yet there's this gulf in performance. She came close at the Red Bull Ring feature race with a P11, but close isn't points. This year rounds out her fourth in Formula 3. And this year, she's moved to a team that's further up the field and has finished further down than the year before. This year has been a very competitive year in Formula 3 as well. I think that's fair to say. But something's not stacking up here. Maybe it's the fact that, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the cars just aren't cut out for the level of physicality she can provide. But at the same time, you look at the young kids that are coming through, people, essentially children that are still physically developing. We mentioned Arvid Lindblad, basically a child. We joke about Antonelli basically being a fetus. There are other people coming through that are physically not going to be as well off. Admittedly, that crossover point is going to come. They are young people. They are going to develop in vastly different ways. That is sort of yet to be fully proven, but I think Flush has got a stop clock over her head at the moment. Maybe one more season, but the moment that someone from F1 Academy, another female driver, arrives and we get a direct rival, a direct comparison, that's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the numbers don't do any favors, and you can't disagree that it has been a tough year. And as we've seen through looking at a lot of these races, in particular from this second half of the season for us, some instances where That could have happened to any driver and just unfortunately happened to her. And it's really unfortunate that it's just motorsport sometimes, though. And I think with Flörsch, in terms of what's next and kind of what she represents, it is this alternative pathway to get in. It shouldn't have to take something like F1 Academy for you to get into this position in the first place. And I think this is why you say about 1 more year. I don't want to see her in F3 next year. And I know that this is going to ruffle further, maybe, but I do just want to see her in Formula 2 just because we have seen the difference from Drive's performances from Formula 3 to Formula 2. And Cushman is always the example we go back to the most. We really questioned why on earth he was getting the promotion considering the F3 season he had. And then he astounded us entirely in F2. Maybe that won't happen here, but I'd like to see her get that chance. And I think after that, depending on how it goes, I don't think as much as I might like it, she's going to get to Formula One. I think she's going to be one of these drivers where maybe you get a Jess Hawkins style reserve driver role and you get some tests that way, but I don't think you'll make it onto the grid. I think we're a while away from that, but she's got maybe a good future elsewhere looking at IndyCar or maybe go back into endurance racing elsewhere. But I think it's important to keep her around for a bit longer until we get those other drivers from either F1 Academy or from alternative sources to have a bit more of a benchmark, because at the moment she is the only one carrying that flag to show you that it's possible. We've got other drivers that we want to be there but haven't been able to for whatever reason, and it's very frustrating. So while she has had a bad year in Formula 3, you take everything into consideration and it does show how tough the competition is, and I still think that there's enough written determination there to give F2 a proper go. And I think, like we said before about Tatiana when she was in F2 last, make sure it's not just a random ass seat that doesn't really get tailored to you at all. Make sure it's done properly, because if we want to have that fair benchmark, like you say, moving forwards in the future when we do get other women coming into F3 and then F2, we want to know if they are genuinely beating her on equal terms or if they're not. And if that gets mired by circumstance and cockpits not being designed properly and all the rest of it, that's going to be really frustrating. So I think I can agree with what you're saying there, but I think there's a bigger narrative at play here that we need to still keep in mind.
Yeah, I think there is overarching sort of aspects of the structure of the season, the structure of the cars and what she's up against. And equally, I still maintain that there is only so long that you can just go, oh, it's terrible luck. Like, yeah,
No,
there
for
is
sure.
also a
I
certain
do agree.
aspect.
There's that element of it, but I think we've seen that. I think the frustrating thing for me on that argument, though, is that we have seen this with F1 drivers, say, that have outlasted way longer than they should have, considering what we know they're capable of and what they claim is bad luck and all the rest of it. So it's like, well, if we're going to be giving them an equal playing field on that regard, then if you get to stick around for way longer than you deserve to, then why shouldn't other people get that same benefit, especially when what they represent is definitely more important in the grand scheme of things, even if it's not necessarily the way you want to and should keep people around, at least there's something there that those other drivers just don't have.
We'll wait and see. Hopefully she's around next year and we get a chance to sort of put that theory to bed, or she's moved up to F2, or she's onto some the pastures new and still racing and achieving, I think is going to be an important thing.
I think it's like Jamie. We wanted to see her get an opportunity, and she's been able to build herself up in Indy Next. And we've seen that it's not just Fluke and W Series or something. We get to see, we need more machinery. We can't just be doing the same thing over and over.
In the nicest possible sense, I don't want to see her in F3 next year. I want to see her moving on to do something new. And if that's not F2, I want to see her sort of going back and doing well at GT
You say
racing, endurance
Formula E,
racing,
IndyCar,
Formula
something
E,
like this.
IndyCar. There
Yeah.
are plenty of other really good single-seater series out there. There are other really good GT and endurance series out there. And that's not to say she's not a talented driver. I just don't think the current setup
But
of
we've seen this
F3,
with some
F2.
drivers. They just happen to be better suited to one style of racing than another.
I just don't think the current setup of F2, F3 is suited to her. I think that's just the unfortunate point where I draw my line. Your spinner, though, it feels like we've spoken about Sophia Flush for way too long.
At least someone's talking about her. I feel like she doesn't always get enough attention at the same time. So there we go. Sebastian Montoya, though, for me, P16 in 2023 and now P17 in 2024, did get a couple of podiums, but only five other point scoring positions for the rest of the season in total. And there's been a fair amount of excitement and hype around him, helped obviously by his father. less so if you're one of the team members who he was having a go at in Monza. But in terms of on-track performance and improvement, given the resources we know are available to a person like him, to not see any real improvement in terms of overall positioning is a shame. And yeah, he had some of this bad luck that we've just been talking about as well. And yeah, that does come into it. But I feel like, again, with what kind of a setup he has around him, to go backwards essentially is not what you want to be doing. And unlike Sophia, I don't know what the benefit of keeping him around is in terms of a big picture sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands next year in particular for me. But he was one of these big names where I think we look at Formula 3 and, like we were saying earlier, we come into a new season and we don't know half the grid at least. And when you see a name that you know, you're like, okay, you were probably here last year. How did you do? You're going to obviously do better. When they then don't do that, and they don't do that by a decent amount, you go, maybe this isn't for you then after all, like we were just saying there, maybe you should try something else.
Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, I think where we see him next year is going to be the real read on this one, because we'll see what happens. I think we'll move to some slightly more positive bits. The other drivers worth a mention, and I've got two for this one, so I'll fly through them
Go for
relatively
it.
quickly because I've had my eye on the Formula 3 grid. I've been trying to keep an eye on who's up to what. Oliver Goethe, we all hail Fornaroli for his consistency, but Goethe has also had a pretty tidy season, three podiums, a win as one of them, and just two non-points finishes and a retirement on the other side of things. His pace and performance has been metered and careful, if not sparkling, and his promotion to F2 to fill in for Colapinto was ultimately what I think is a sensible one. Sami Megatuniv as well really stands out. The recency bias is a good point after Monza, but that Imola win was also a great drive from him, and he's had some decent spans of consistency despite another year of F3 chaos in a field where the top of the grid has been so competitive. It's tricky to really come to the top if you're not the absolute creme de la creme. But Megatuniv has been working his way through there. And again, he was a rookie this year, I believe. So if he's already starting to sort of make a bit of a name, make a sort of a bit of a show of himself in a good way, he's going to be one to keep an eye on next year, I believe.
No, definitely, and like you say, really, really strong end to the season for him. And another one of these drivers where, a bit like Christian Mansell, you've got nothing to lose by just going for it, and you can fight as hard or as little as you want. You know you're kind of sorted either way because of the position that you're in, and not being in contention for a championship is weirdly freeing in some ways. We saw this IndyCar last weekend with McLaughlin in particular going and winning in the second race at Milwaukee. And it just kind of goes, well, why shouldn't I chase this win? I've got nothing else to go after. I've got no pressure for it. And that very much kind of translated, I feel like, with Megatuniv here in this particular weekend. So one to keep an eye on for sure. I don't know if he'll make the step up next year. I think he's probably destined to stay in F3 for another year, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think, what was it, last year or the year before, a lot of drivers made the step up to F2 that I wasn't too chuffed about. I thought that's a bit too soon for some of these drivers, and I think I was proved right with a few of them going, you could have done with an extra year in F3, and it showed. For me, though, Tim Tramnitz is the standout for me as another driver worth mentioning, because he was overshadowed essentially by Arvid Lindblad, which, again, if you're going to get overshadowed by someone, fair enough. But Tramnitz P9 in his rookie season with four podiums, including a win in Monza, and interestingly, one of seven full season drivers not to DNF all season long, which in Formula 3 is quite a decent record to have. So someone for me where Red Bull have enough drivers to be keeping an eye on for the time being, but it's nice to have Tim Tramnitz in your back pocket, I think.
Yeah, he's a really handy little driver, and I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what he's able to do next. A bit more of a spit and polish in F3 before putting him into F2 and the sort of the hotter crucible that it is, and then see what happens after that will be a really interesting one. Again, Red Bull Junior, isn't it? I think, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see what they decide to do with him. Rounds out sort of looking at our drivers and constructors. Every team saw a driver stand on the podium this year, which I think is a really interesting one for F3, and it'll be a great sort of high watermark to see if they're able to get to that with next year's car. And with, again, what he said, new car, shake up. It was a big shake up for F2. We don't know how well the teams are going to take to this new one for F3, but that will be proven in time. Regardless, top of the Drivers' Championship, Fornaroli 153 points, Mini 130, Browning 128. When it comes to constructors, Prema won out 352 points, Trident 281, and ART 245 points.
What
Really
interesting
good
how much of a
season.
gulf there is in those top three, particular coming towards end season. We have this really close season with drivers all over the place, and like you say, every team gets a podium, and yet you look at the top three, and there's the gigantic gulfs by kind of comparison with what we've just said there, with each of them, and you go, how?
Yeah, I mean, with certainly in constructors, Prema 122 over 107 to Trident in Imola, and then just basically Prema started to pull away. Trident sort of had a battle with ART that sort of raged on before eventually sort of swapping over and going into the final round. But yeah, Prema pretty much had this sewn up from Silverstone, really. They
Prima do
absolutely
Prima
rocked it
things.
up to that. They just did usual Prema things, not F2 Prema things. But yeah,
Excellent.
it's. Yeah, but I mean, even when you look at like the driver's title in F3, the graph for this is truly bonkers because you've got, ignoring Ollie Goerther's sort of final round, you've got seven drivers that are constantly sort of weaving in and out. No one ever seems to have really led it for more than two rounds. And you look at where the season starts off: Browning leads coming out of Bahrain, leads coming out of Australia, then Fornaroli leads in coming out of Imola, then Mini leads coming out of Monaco, then Fornaroli leads coming out of Spain. Then Browning leads coming out of Austria, then Mini leads coming out of Silverstone and coming out of Hungary, and then Fornaroli leads coming out of Spa, and all he's got to do is cling on to it to lead coming out of Monza. And like, you look at the constant crisscrossing, it's all over the gaff, and it is a proper fight all the way
It's
through.
exactly what you want to see, though.
Yes, yeah, it's a proper crucible for finding out who's got talent and who hasn't, who can sink and who can swim. And you look at the drivers that have sunk a little bit. Laurens van Hopen started the season P8 and dropped all the way down to sort of P13 by the end of it. Not a huge drop, but you've got to lose a few weekends here or there and not get as many points to be overtaken by your likes of your Callum Voisins, your Nicholas Solovs, and your Noel Leons. And then we get into the drivers we already mentioned: Tramnitz, Megatunif, Goerther, and Beganovic, the regular names that we're always heaping praise on. So it's been a fun one to keep an eye
I
on this
think this
year.
is going to be really interesting now to see what we get for next year. Obviously, we've got this new car. We're going to have a little bit of a jumbled up calendar again because of F1 and what they're doing. And because of the car in particular, I think this is, I'm pinning a lot on this, I know, but it would just be a shame if they don't use this opportunity wisely. And you've got a slew of F1 Academy drivers who are going to become available. You're going to have people from Freca very much available, not just your Marta Garcias and your Bulas, but other drivers doing well there. I think you were saying about Tupper earlier being one of those. It'd be nice to see him jump into this. And you're going to obviously see a few drivers graduate, a few drivers just aren't going to come back. Some will, and some of those that do come back will be scratching our head a little bit about. But it's always interesting to see as well which one of the ones that we're scratching our heads about then have this massive jump up in quality, and also because of the change in car, how that's going to affect them, particularly like we say with the setup. If we do see Flörsch back again next year, if this car really suits her, then we know that Tatiana's definitely done the homework that they needed to do, and it's really nice that will A, help so much, but B, is also really bad in some sense because it shows how much of a disadvantage that they've been having all this time. And we're somehow going to have to survive this very long off season with, we don't know when we're going to get any news really about it. We'll find out when we find out. But I just thought we'd have that little bit of a teaser before we finish this monster length episode on Formula 3. Any last thoughts from you?
No, I think I've covered everything that I really wanted to get into. So it's been a good season overall, and I'm looking forward to what they do next year. I think we're going into next year with a lot of good questions that we want answering, not so much sort of, oh, I've got questions I want answering, sort of going and going, I have questions I want answering, and I'm eager to see what happens. And equally, the same can be said for sort of Formula 2 as to who's moving up and the questions that might ask or questions that it will ask, but we already immediately know the answer to, in some cases, I would hazard a guess at.
That is all we've got time for on this edition of the Undercut Podcast. Be sure to have likes and subscribe and notifications turned on so you don't miss any of our Formula One and FIA series content. We've got a Monza Grand Prix review out at the moment. We've also got Silverstone Festival wrap up from Jesse and Ellie May out on there. We'll have some F1 Academy content after Singapore. We've had a bit more racing there. Formula 2. I think maybe we're going to have an episode after Baku potentially before we go into the final leg of the season with them. I can't remember if we've scheduled one for that or not, but keep an eye out. This is why you have the notifications turned on so that you don't miss any of this in case we got it wrong. But in the meantime, Jesse, if people want to find a bit more of you, where can they find you?
I can be found all across the internet as at Jesse on Cars. And if you want even more from me, you can support print media by picking up Classic Car Weekly and enjoying that. We've got one issue that will actually, by the time you listen to this, our new issue will be out this week. And I can't remember what's in it, which is great because I only previewed it yesterday. Oh well, pick it up, read it. I'm sure it's fantastic. In fact, I know it's fantastic. There you go. Timo, where can the people find you?
Bit like yourself, here, there, and everywhere. We're near the end of the IndyCar season, so do listen to our IndyCar reviews over on the Across the Pond Sports Network IndyCar edition. We've really got to find a shorter way of saying that. Nitro Cross is back this weekend, so there's going to be some content out there, and you can find all of that over on social media to find all the links for that by searching for t.hours.daily.onthecurbs. So that's where you can find me. Thank you all very much for listening. In the meantime, hope you've enjoyed Formula 3 this season as much as I have, and we will see you again soon with some more F1 and FIA series action. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.